You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 355. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I decided that as I was doing this intro, I was all of a sudden going to like get up in the chair that I was in and adjust how I was sitting, which probably is not what an audio professional would do in that situation. But let no one say that anyone on this show knows what they're doing. Joining me tonight and other nights, Mr. John Gentile. Hey, John.
Listen, Adam. Our strongest defense is self-deprecation. You can't say we're terrible because we tell everyone we're terrible. So we're, in a sense, by downplaying ourselves, we become invincible. I kind of think it's like a Star Wars thing. If you strike me down now, I shall become more powerful than you could ever imagine. And if there's one way to impress a lady, Adam White, it's to quote Star Wars. Let me tell you.
Oh, is that? I start recording and then like I'm half a sentence into the show and I'm like, oh, I should really be sitting on my foot instead of sitting like a normal person like I was. And then I start moving and I'm like, and I stop and I think to myself, that's probably the kind of thing that if you actually went to some sort of broadcasting school, the professor would walk over and smack you. Be like, why are you moving around? Like, stop it. Stop.
Well, let me counterattack. I was thinking about writing today. And let me tell you, writing cannot be taught in school. Grammar can be taught in school. And I guess sentence structure, that's grammar, can be taught in school. But good writing is not taught in school. So is by chance the virtue? Well, I messed that up. It just goes to show that we're not
speaking is not taught in school. What?
The point being is could we rise above our educated and trained compadres by being completely willy-nilly and amateurish because we are not bound by preconceived constraints that don't actually exist?
Oh yeah. So if by continuously fucking up and being amateurish, are we somehow going to surmount people that do this for a living? I say yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Of course. I imagine that we'll do this show and then it'll be episode like 670, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, John, big bag of money.
I'll take it.
Just, you know, giant sack dollar sign on it. You don't know where it came from.
It happened to Nirvana. It happened to us.
Yeah. Yeah. And that worked out well for them. Well, for Dave,
which one of us is going to be the Kurt Cobain and who's going to be the Courtney Love?
Is it too soon? Can we make jokes about Nirvana's demise? I don't know. I mean, Ricky can because he was born like 30 years after that. Hi, Ricky.
Hey, guys. It's been a while. I just realized
it has.
It's been like I only have been on since Punk Rock Bowling passed. But missed you.
You've been up to adventures, Ricky. I've seen all these pictures of like you with other human beings doing fun things and being at shows and all this stuff. And I'm just sitting here covered in like, you know, dust and dander and everything. What kind of life are you living? What are you up to? What's going on?
Well, the big thing was Punk Rock Bowling. That was my second Punk Rock Bowling, and it was a hell of a weekend, just like last year.
Adam, does Ricky sound springier and more refreshed than usual? Do you detect that maybe something's changed in Ricky's life?
I had a vacation finally.
Ricky does sound, what's the word I'm looking for, John? Like, he sounds vital. Right, like he's got some
vital.
Joie de vivre going on there.
Yeah, I don't take vacations a lot, so like Punk Rock Bowling is sort of becoming my yearly 4 or 5 days off. But it was cool. I mean, do we want to get into this now? I mean,
we're just playing it loose. We may as well, and then we'll jump into other stuff afterwards. Before you get into your punk rock bowling experience, I have a question for you because I'm comparing it with mine. Yeah. Do you actually gamble?
Yes.
Okay. I was worried that the evolution of punk rock bowling from like a weird little inclusive music industry thing to a bigger mega festival was going to somehow lose the gambling aspect of it. So, okay. So you do. That's neat. All right. That's good. What's your game?
Yeah. My game, honestly, I think I was with our other editor, Stevie, and her husband, John, and they like playing the slots. I think the slots are literally just they're just stacked against you. So I mean, of course I would go to something else that's stacked against me and play roulette. And that's sort of what I like doing. Last year, I made a good amount of money last year. And this year I made like $40.
Roulette was never something that I had the stones to play. If only because once me and Scott Heisel, when we were there, he very boldly walked up to the roulette table and like bet a whole bunch of something on black or red or whatever, and then it was gone in like 9 seconds. And I'm like, that seems like,
yeah,
that's not good. Our game in the early days of the of Punk News playing in the punk rock bowling tournament was blackjack. We were all playing blackjack, and we would wander around like cheapskates until we found some table that was playing the cheapest hand of blackjack that you could, and we would try to ride that for a while. And the amusing thing was that we would go and we would do that. And if you were, you know, if you were not completely fucking up, and it's hard to really fuck up when you play blackjack because the dealer will usually stop you if you do something really stupid and be like, don't do that. Right.
Yeah.
You know, we found that like you could ride a blackjack table for a couple of hours if you were trying to not be a total screw up about it. And that was always pretty good, but we would go and sit down and we'd play blackjack, and there would be record label folk who I will leave anonymous to protect their innocence that would sit down at the table with us and start playing. And then we'd play for a few hours, and then we would realize that A, we don't actually have that much money, and B, we're not good at this, and C, well, at least for me, I'm on East Coast time, so I'm ultra jet lagged at like 2-3 in the morning Vegas time. So we would leave and go back to our rooms and sleep or whatever. And then we'd show up the next day and these same record label people would be at the same table.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they, yeah, yeah. And they looked horrible, Ricky. They looked like they had been beat up and set on fire. And when we left, when we left the table to go to sleep, they were, you know, behind a mountain of chips. They were way up. Everything was great. And we showed up the next morning and man, it looked like they had been chewed up and spit out by a large animal and they looked horrible and there was no chips. And then, ooh. So it was like, okay, we got out of this. We got out of this at the right time.
Yeah. I mean,
you previously said who that was in the podcast.
Did I? I don't want to do that to anyone. I mean, the other thing that I will say about my nascent, my youth at the punk rock bowling was one of the things that I learned from a person in the punk rock community that has been very valuable in my life was that when you wake up in the morning and you're jet lagged and you've been drinking all night and you feel really shitty, what you want to drink at whatever in the morning is a double tall Greyhound. Ricky, you familiar with the Greyhound?
I'm not.
A Greyhound is like a screwdriver, except they make it with pineapple juice. It's like pineapple juice and vodka. So you want to drink Greyhounds in the morning to kind of like, you know, replenish your essential bodily fluids and kind of get you going again. And do you know who I learned that from? I learned that from Mr. Tobias Jegg of Red Scare Records.
Who was actually at Punk Rock Bowling this time?
Well, when we were there, he was Mr. Tobias Jegg of Fat Records. But that was one of the many life lessons I learned from Toby was that when you wake up and you feel like shit, you have to drink Greyhounds.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, you know, because there are no windows in casinos, and it's really easy to, and you're so distracted, it's really easy to gamble all night if you have the means. And I remember last year, the year before, you know, I was at the roulette table like around midnight. Next thing I knew, or not midnight, but maybe around one, next thing I knew, it was like four. And the whole thing flew by. And also, you know, if you don't smoke cigarettes, you feel like once you're done, once punk rock bowling is over, you feel like you've been smoking for like your whole life because you just inhale so much tobacco smoke. But yeah, I mean, this year was pretty awesome. I didn't gamble as much though. I honestly hadn't been to Vegas to be old when I was old enough to gamble until last year. So that was my first time gambling, but it kind of lost its luster after that. I didn't really gamble a whole lot after.
So I mean, like moving away from sin, Ricky. how was the punk rock part of punk rock bowling?
It was phenomenal. It was really great. The first day ended for me like at 5:30, and I think the first day we saw it was the Iggy Pop night, and that was mind blowing. He did like the Passenger and Lust for Life like right after each other. It was pretty great, and I'm really glad I finally got to see him. He was on my bucket list. I had not seen him since then, and then the night after, after he finished, I walked like a mile and a half to one of the other one of the club shows, and that was Toys That Kill, Bad Cop, Bad Cop, Lawrence Arms, and the Menzingers, and that was like what I nicknamed like the Orgcore club show. But it'd been like 3 or 4 years since I'd seen the Lawrence Arms. I was so happy, and it was to see them. It was really, really great. And then actually the night before, we managed to get into the surprise guest show, which was that was the Friday show. And it turned out the surprise guest was Starving Wolves, Pears, and Me First in the Gimme Gimmies. And that was really cool. But you know, what I also like about this festival is like seeing like bands I've never seen or had ever checked out. But so we got there to see Mobina Galore. They were really, really good. I played them on there. Plague Vendor put on a really, really good show. The Interrupters, like they always, I mean, their show is always very lively, but like what I noticed was when they started, a wave of people rushed the stage, like a really big wave. It was great. Off were amazing. Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, the night, you know, that again, were great too, on the main stage. I'm just looking through the lineup. For the second day, I actually checked out the Real McKenzies, and they were fun. So were the Dickies, Bouncing Souls. But then the Choking Victim set was actually really interesting. They brought up, you know, I think Ara from the Slackers played drums. They had people, and they had members of the Bouncing Souls come up to, and they all played Crack Rock Steady, I think, for the final song. And my only criticism of the festival this year was I have no idea why Fiddler was performing and why they went on after Choking Victim. They sort of stood out like a sore thumb.
I don't know who that band is.
I learned this at their show. They said that the Fiddler stands for "fuck it, dude, life's a risk," and I didn't get it. And I don't think a lot of people did. It just didn't work. It's not that they were bad. It was just like, this is not your, it doesn't seem like your festival. And Bad Religion were great as usual. I also saw Carrier on my last club show. They were amazing. Tardin Control was amazing. And punk rock, I'd never seen punk rock karaoke. I did not sing, but we saw Eric from the Basis of Pears sing Myage by the Descendants. And that was pretty cool. And then, you know, for day three, you know, I saw Discharge, who I'd never seen before and never really listened to that much. They were cool. The Addicts were great. Then the Pennywise set was interesting. They didn't do that. What they did was they did a bunch of their, you know, like they did play like Society and Fuck Authority and stuff like that. But they also brought on, Greg Hetson, and they covered a minor threat song by the Circle Jerks. And then they played a Bad Religion song that's escaping me right now. And that was really cool too. And like Jim Lindbergh was like, come on, Stern Brothers, let's get a Circle Jerks reunion going. And I'm thinking like, would that ever happen? And then Cox Bar were cool. I'd never seen them either. And this was probably in, you know, they played a bunch of new stuff, which is cool too. And then I'm trying to think of any, did I go to any other club shows? I don't think so. Yeah, that was it. It was still phenomenal. I still got to get my review in, but it was. I mean, going just for Iggy and Choking Victim alone was more than worth it. And it's an easy trip from here, so yeah, it was. This was really, really cool.
Cool. I mean, that sounds great.
I'm sure if you're. Yeah, it was cool.
So, Mr. John.
Mr. Adam?
Anything in the mail before we get going?
Well, I went to Punk Rock Bowling too, Adam. Thanks, Red.
Oh!
Yes, he did.
Oh, right. Okay. John. On the, yeah.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks.
Right.
John, yeah. Tell us about your...
John, Adam knows where his bread's buttered at, people.
John, tell us about your first NoFX show.
So listen, Punk Rock Bowling, a lot of acts. I'll just go over the highlights. First of all, I'll say Posers absolutely killed it. They played a couple of new songs. They really wowed the audience. They played, you know, Posers kind of like, to me, cross between the Avengers and Gen X with a little bit of a new spin. The audience is a little bit confused by them because front woman Jade is a very unique singer, a very unique person. And it was awesome. And I think they won people over. That was awesome. Charles Bradley. And even though it seems like everyone in the punk community has been saying to all the punk rockers, Charles Bradley, he's a soul guy. You'll like him. Charles Bradley, learn who he is. It's like no one knew who he was before he came out. But man, let me tell you, Charles Bradley came out and he killed it. And listen, I even got a greater understanding for Charles Bradley. He closed out with his cover of Black Sabbath's Changes, and he did this beautiful speech at the end. I won't say it because maybe if you go see him, maybe he'll do the same speech. He does this beautiful speech at the end. But I actually gained a greater appreciation for him because prior to seeing him live, I was of the impression, well, people love him now because he's kind of retro. And if he was around, he was around in the 60s, but if he was famous in the 60s, he would be kind of a B-level soul guy, like not quite as good as James Brown, George Clinton, Sly, B.B. King, Albert King, not Sam Cooke, not quite as good as those guys, but very good, you know. However, I saw him live, and he was amazing live, but not only was he life is unique compared to those other soul. You know, James Brown's got his own thing going on. George Clinton's got his own thing going on. Sam Cooke's got his own thing going on. If Charles Bradley was famous back then in the 60s as well, or the 50s, 60s, he would probably be English because not only is he as good as those guys, or almost as good, I wouldn't say anybody as good as James Brown, George Clinton, but almost as good as those guys, very nearly close. He also has a unique perspective and a very unique timbre in the way he speaks and the way he sings. And when he sings, it really is a moving experience, whether or not you're a spiritual person or not, or whether or not you believe in karma or dharma or Buddhist concept, or even if you're atheist, anything like that, I think you would be moved by the mere sentiment in how he sings. It was an amazing thing, and everyone at Punk Rock Bowling was blown away. And I actually saw him on the boardwalk the next day, and I went up and I talked to him for a little while, and he was cool. He was real cool, and actually he was kind of weird, which I liked. So he really is kind of the guy he appears to be on stage, but he was cool. I would say the second biggest winners of Punk Rock Bowling were Crazy in the Brains. They were earlier on the first day, and let me tell you, people, Crazy in the Brains came to destroy, and they destroyed. Crazy in the Brains are made for the big time. They had a huge stage show, not like with explosion stuff, but they were all over the stage. They were kicking out the jams. People love them. I think that's probably the biggest crowd win over I've ever seen. People being indifferent to being in love with a band during one. Crazy and the Brains, who, you know, are just weird, crazy, unique, but they rock and people love them and they were amazing. However, winners of Punk Rock Bowling, I could not believe this show.
What?
People say, John, the dwarves. You only like the Dwarves because of the Dwarves. Yet again, it was, I reframed this, the Dwarves are one of my favorite bands, not because of the Dwarves. The Dwarves are one of my favorite bands because they are one of the greatest bands ever. I actually saw the Dwarves twice, on Thursday night and Friday night. Thursday night, they played a non-punk rock bowling show at a place called John and Peter's in New Hope. Ween played there back in the day, and a lot of the Ween guys still show up there a lot, actually. And before the show, numerous Dwarves were not feeling well. They were pretty sick. And so they weren't really sure what they were going to do with the show because they were not in good health. So they decided to do something special. So for the show, they came out. Nick Oliveri did a whole bunch of songs. And it was cool to see Nick Oliveri doing songs he didn't usually do. Then Guy Heller came out. Do you guys know who Guy Heller is?
No.
Is that the guitarist that's not He Who?
No. You're thinking of Fresh Prince of Darkness.
Right.
Guy Heller is the singer for the Ween spinoff band Moist Boys. And he's not a phenomenal singer, but what he really is a wild man. And what's weird is last time I saw him, he was bald. This time I saw him, he's basically trying to make himself look exactly like Iggy Pop. Like he's lost muscle mass to be like skinnier, and he's grown his hair and he's combing his hair like Iggy Pop. So if someone came up to you and said, "This is Iggy Pop," you wouldn't be like, "Oh, that's definitely Iggy Pop," but you wouldn't be like, "I'm not sure that's not Iggy Pop. Maybe that is Iggy Pop." You know, like he really looks like Iggy Pop these days. So he comes out on stage and he smashes a bottle over his head the first thing and starts doing a bunch of songs. Have you guys ever seen anybody actually smash a bottle over their head? Like I didn't think people actually did that.
How do we know the bottle wasn't fake?
Because I saw him drinking out of it, Ricky.
Oh.
John and Peters holds like 20 people, literally, like 20 people. So he comes out, he finishes the bottle, and he smashes it over his head. There's broken glass all over. Like, I didn't know you could actually do that. And like, he was doing, like, the Iggy Pop thing, like, rolling around on the ground with the broken glass. And it was crazy. Your boys Decent Criminal were there, and they came out, and they did, like, 3 or 4 songs.
That's cool.
It was a weird, wild, crazy show. If I was a Dwarf fan and I'd never seen the Dwarves before, I probably would have been disappointed because it wasn't a classic show, but it was cool. And also, Murphy's Law opened. And have you guys ever seen Murphy's Law?
I haven't.
Jimmy Gestapo, he literally drank like 3/4 of a thing of Jack Daniels. No, not Jack Daniels. what's the thing with the deer on the cup front? The rednecks drinking at Slayer shows. Jack Jagermeister.
Oh, yeah. He drank. Oh, yeah. I've had very bad experiences.
Like, isn't that nasty as hell? And what?
It's like licorice liqueur. It's like licorice flavored hard alcohol. It's gnarly.
And wouldn't like drinking 3/4 that like kill most people?
I'll say I've had bad experiences with it.
Like he was completely unfazed, like, and he's like handing around people drinking out of it, and he's drinking out of it. Like, people, you know, germs exist and like diseases exist. He didn't care. Yeah. He's drinking this. Also, he drank like 5 or 6 beers. Also, he's insulting John and Peters while he's on stage. Also, he's insulting people while he's on stage. Also, he's smoking joints while he's on stage, and he's not fazed at all. He's like he did a lot of talking, but it worked because it was such a shit show in a good way. Like, he's making fun of people. He's drinking yay. He's drinking beer. He's making fun of people. And at the end, they did like a 25-minute ska song, and he was just like making stuff up, and it was amazing. So it was a very sloppy shit show in the best way, but it wasn't a classic Dwarf show. So I was a little worried because the next night it was supposed to be Dwarves then Conflict, but Conflict canceled, and so I know the Dwarves and some other people were concerned. It's like, well, a lot of people are here for Conflict, not the Dwarves. You know, is this going to be a bad show? Dwarves are a great band, and that the Dwarves do come to do battle. They do have something to prove, and they do come play and say, "We're the best band there is. We're better than everybody else here." And they came out, and it was one of the craziest shows I've ever seen.
Did they do new songs from the EP?
They did a couple of new songs, but they came out. They did all of Dwarves Are Young and Good Looking. Then they played 15 hardcore tracks right in a row. No talking, no bullshitting, just bam, bam, bam. And by like the last 3 or 4 songs, they kept speeding up, till it was like just a complete like blast out explosion, where it's just like people screaming into the mix, and it's just complete, like the band just shattered at the end. It was like an hour and a half show, which was a really long Dwarf show, and they just played hardcore so fiercely. You could tell that they came and said, well, people are here for Conflict. They want the harder punk, so we're going to come show them what the Dwarves do. And the Dwarves just destroyed the place. I mean, ask anybody that was there at the Stone Pony, the first night of Punk Rock Bowling, the Dwarves destroyed. It was either the best or the best Dwarves I've ever seen. And they came to do battle, and they did battle, and it was amazing. I mean, wow. Wow.
But how did you like NoFX?
Well, I'm going to get to that. But before the Dwarves played, a circle pit broke out, and I was kind of doing the tough guy thing. You know how, like, you can sit at the back of the circle pit and, like stand there so you have the best view because the mosh pit's in front of you, but not mosh, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Adam, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got to be riding your elbow to make sure that you...
Right, I was doing that, right? I was doing that, but this drunk guy, like, comes out in the middle of the mosh pit, and he had two beers that he just bought, and some guy checks him, and he drops both the beers, and he gets furious. So he goes back, and he gets two more beers. I'm like, I see this come from a mile away. And so the drunk guy gets checked again, and he loses two more beers in the mosh pit. So he's pretty drunk. So he's, like, trying to, like, trip people because he's so mad, and he can't do that. So he starts, like, trying to, like, reverse mosh and kind of, like, slap people because he's drunk. So one of the guys got, like, really mad at him, I guess, and I didn't see who it was, but the guy checked the drunk guy, and the drunk guy's head slammed right into my abdomen, and I got the wind knocked out of me for the first time since I played rugby in college. And I literally, like, it was before the Dwarves, and I was, like, bent over, and like, you know how many get the wind knocked out of you? It's actually, like, tough to breathe because your, not your appendix, what do you call it? Your airbag, what do you call that?
Lungs?
Your diaphragm. Your diaphragm gets compressed. You know what I mean? And so you, like, can't breathe because it's been compressed and it's trying to open itself back up. So I get the guy's head slams into my stomach. I go, I'm like bent over, and I said to the people next to me, I gotta go in the back. I'm like limping the crowd, bent over, like, and I was so embarrassed because he was a tough guy, and I got the crap knocked out of me because I was trying to be cool, and I got proven that I was not cool, man.
When he so said anyway, he was spilling all that beer, and then he tried to reverse mosh, all I could picture was, like, rewinding the tape backwards, and maybe he could, like, unspill the beer if he moshes in reverse, but that's not what you're talking about at all. Because
he was trying to be, like, the ultimate tough guy where you mosh against the current, but he was way too drunk to do that. Way too drunk. Anyways, so also, NoFX closed the night out. Oh, specials were real cool, too. Specials were real cool. And actually, the singer, I forget his name, not Dammers. Who's the singer of the specials? Hall. Jerry Hall. Isn't that his name? Or not Jerry Hall. Something Hall. He sounded amazing. He really did sound good. So anyway, NoFX closed the show out. And I was left with a quandary, if you will, or a existential question. The question being, what is a good punk show? You know what I mean? Because on the Dwarves metric or on the Crazy in the Brains metric, both bands came to smash it up. NoFX was not that good. I mean, they came out there, they talked, they bullshit it, you know, they screwed up a lot, you know what I mean? And when they actually did play their songs, they sounded pretty good, but I wasn't really that wowed by a lot of their songs. I was wowed by the newest songs. That just goes to prove to me that the new album is really good. The older stuff maybe not is for me, is not for me. But, like, they were kind of funny between the things. And so the question is, what is a show? Like, is a show really just blasting out the tunes the best you can? Or is it creating a unique piece of art that other people aren't creating? Because if we go by that metric, then NoFX did pretty good in that they were kind of very punk in that they didn't care if they were good or not. And they didn't even really care if the audience was entertained. And they're getting paid a lot of money. So that's sort of their
MO. I've seen them like 3 or 4 times now. And they always bullshit on stage. They don't play badly. It's just sometimes, you know, if they screw up, they really embrace it and make sure everyone knows that they screwed up.
It's a weird equation, I think, when you are a band that has like a huge catalog behind you. Everyone knows you. You're somewhat iconic, because, like, at that point, what do you do? Like, NoFX playing live, especially NoFX, there's a certain expectation that they're going to be jokey and sloppy and that's sort of part of the ride. And while there's stuff in the NoFX catalog where if they assembled it all into a set, they could totally come out and kick your ass with it for 30 minutes. But, you know, is that Is that the way a NoFX show works these days? I mean, maybe it should be, but it's not. And, you know, it's got to be a weird balance you've got to figure out between, like, you know, how much do you want to, you know, go out there and try to prove that you're the greatest band in the universe, and how much are you going to go out there and more or less play to type and try to, you know, do the things that people are expecting of you to do. So I imagine in a situation like this, where it's a festival, where, you know, people are going from band to band, and you've only got a limited amount of time and this and that, you know, maybe you play it safe and you go out and you do your shtick, right? Like you play the hits, you joke around, you do what people expect of you.
Yeah, indeed, I viewed it as kind of diametric opposites. The dwarves knew they were facing a hostile crowd, so they said, we're going to come here to show everybody why we're the best, and we're just going to do the most banging set we can. Whereas NoFX, it was like, we know everyone here loves us, so we don't care what we do. We're just going to do whatever the hell we feel like and screw around. And I don't know if one way is better than the other, to tell you the truth. I mean, you could argue NoFX is more punk rock and that they're doing what they want, not what the audience wants, you know? I don't know, man.
Oh, John, I have one other question. How was Leftover Crack? And I believe wasn't Kate Koish there too?
Who is Kate Koish? She was there.
She's in another band. She doesn't tour with them a lot because she has a job where she lives. I believe she lives in Oakland or somewhere in Northern California. So she'll play with them, but when she has time, I guess. But she was the female vocals on Contracts of the State, which is good.
Is she in the band now, or what's the deal?
According to the, you know, their profile on the Fat Records website, she's in the band photo.
I think that counts. Leftover Crack was actually really good. They were really sloppy, but I like that because, like, they were against a lot of, you know, Epifact kind of bands who are usually very polished. So I like that Leftover Crack came out sloppy, nasty sounding. But actually, they did a couple of really interesting things. And I think people didn't get it. They opened with a cover of a Bruce Springsteen's Dancing in the Dark, which I thought was hilarious. I thought that was, like, the funniest thing ever. Okay. People didn't think that was, like, funny at all. Also, lately, Leftover Crack's been doing a greatest hit set, which I've seen enough of, honestly. They totally mixed up the set and did a whole bunch of new stuff and some of the other songs, and it was real cool. So,
okay, because, you know, I've seen footage of them playing Summer of 69 also. Like, they did a ska version of it. I think I saw it, like, on Instagram. And then, of course, the Men at Work cover. I think they just like doing 80s covers now.
Well, they do. I know that they're a big, I mean, even Choking Victim did two 80s covers. I just love how they came out to the Jersey Place and covered Bruce Springsteen. And I wonder if they were saying Bruce Springsteen is cool or they were saying Bruce Springsteen sucks. And I like that about it.
That's cool.
Thanks for asking me about how my punk rock bowling experience was, Adam.
Oh, God, that took forever. All right, it's 30 minutes in. Someone play a song. Are we doing a theme here, or are we just going to go?
I think that means we are themeless.
We are themeless. Ricky, play a song, and then we'll come back. Oh, okay. We'll do some mail.
All right, so I played the Rebel Spell in here before, but... since they're, I guess they're not active, or I don't think they've officially broken up, but they're definitely not active right now. But their guitarist, I believe Aaron, has another band called Alien Boys, and they put an album called Self Critical Theory last year, and I forgot how I came across them, but anyway, it's like a 7-track EP. You can find it on their Bandcamp. It's good. So I'm gonna play a song called Silencer. By Alien Boys. Here it is.
Sanity and sanctity.
All right, we're back. That was Alien Boys playing Silencer. Before we get into anything, John, any mail? Anything we should talk about?
We do. This is from Phil Collins, and I don't know if his name really is Phil Collins or not. Hey, guys. It was funny to hear you mention Evil Empire, the band Evil Empire, on the podcast, as I don't know if many people outside of our Chicagoland punk bubble knew about them. They put out one of the great ska core albums about 10 years ago, and they fizzled out for a while. They are back now with a new singer playing some of their old songs and some new songs in Spanish. Evil Empire rules. Their album Still Alive rules. If Stafford Sean is having a hard time finding shows to go to, I run a fairly extensive list of upcoming shows in the Chicagoland area. Check it out at changetherotation.com. There are plenty of DIY shows on there for under 21s. Anyway, glad to hear some Chicago shout-outs on the show. Keep up the good work with the podcast. And I'll say, Phil, even though I don't live in Chicago, keep up with those show lists. I used to live out in the Bay Area, and they had like it was the show list and had like every show listed. It's called like foopy.net or something. It's got like a weird name, but it's just called the list. And I used it all the time to seek out shows in the Bay Area. So I love it when someone's got the drive to just do a list of every punk show or almost every punk show in the area. Philly used to have one, but it fizzled out, which was a big bummer.
Man, I forget which the one was around here, but there was like those straight, you know, like old school, you know, not fancy show listing internet thing. I don't even want to say websites, because like website gives them sometimes too much credit for being designed. Like sometimes it was like it was a page with a text file on it, and like these are the shows coming up, right? Those were so important when I was a kid. So yeah, huge respect for doing that kind of thing.
This is from Liverpool Neil, who writes in the yell at us. Hello, chaps. Liverpool Neil here. Episode 353. Another fine show, despite Adam's leprosy and Stafford Sean being 12. Actually, Stafford Sean did really well and fits right in. And he's from Chicago, just like me. So maybe I'll see him at a show sometime, assuming he's old enough to get in. Adam. Don't feel bad for the white t-shirt thing at the Against Me house show. Back in the early days of my punk past, 1978 in Liverpool, our enemies weren't the Teds like in London. No, we were getting beat up by the Legion of Heavy Metal kids. Some of them were called bikers or gribos, but we called them sweats. The sweats would wear flare jeans, leather jackets with cut-off stinky denim vests, and would always wear black band t-shirts, AC/DC, Rainbow, Judas Priest. So as a counter, punk band t-shirts were always white. I don't know any punk back then who wore black t-shirts. So feel proud. You are being part of your heritage.
I like this email. This is good.
John. Your tips for college was a good idea for an episode. I got really lucky in my college years. And that's where being old has its benefit. I went to college in Manchester in 1980, so I got to see the birth of a lot of the greatest Manchester bands. I saw the Smiths' third show. I saw New Order's first show. I saw the Chameleons, the Passage, Jerudy Column, The Fall, as well as all the touring punk bands of the time, The Clash, Ramones, CCC with the Banshees, etc. Then I went to the UC as an exchange, USA, as an exchange student in 1983, and saw a lot of the early US hardcore bands as they toured, Circle Jerks, Black Flag, DKs, SNFU, Minutemen, etc. Amazing memories. So yeah, youngsters need to follow your advice, John. Find the local scene and go to every show you can. And go to the opening bands, too. They need your support and may end up surprising you. I saw Joy Division and the Smiths both as opening bands. This goes out to Stafford Sean. Stafford Sean, it's great that you are from Chicago. Now we have to get you into some classic Chicago punk and to get you in touch with your history. Start with Naked Ray Gun and the Effigies, and then add some Pegboy and Articles of Faith and Tom Trauma. Moto Blot 2017 is coming up. That is the best Chicago fest. It's June 24 and June 5 outside the Cobra Lounge. Old cars, old motorcycles, and scooters with a lot of great bands. Saturday, Pegboy is playing. Saturday, Pegboy is headlining, and Sunday, it's all rockabilly and psychobilly. Hope to see you all there. Stay free from Liverpool Neil.
That was a quality Liverpool Neil email. It had like a little bit for everyone. That was like the end of the Wizard of Oz, right? where he's going to walk out and like he's going to give everyone what they need and not necessarily what they ask for, but what completes them.
I think Liverpool Neil's entering his prime emailing. That's what I think.
Yeah, that was great. All right, so we had two, right? So we're ready to actually talk about whatever crap happened this week.
We're ready.
Oh boy, because this week was there was a lot of stuff. So, all right, so we're just going to spin the wheel on this. We have this grab bag of stories that happened this week. None of them are super interesting, which is not to say some of these bands aren't cool. It's just that you know what I'm as I'm speaking, John is in our list deleting stories.
No fear.
So there was apparently a Green Day video, but I'm not going to talk about it because John just deleted the story. So whatever. So there is, I think, like one serious story that we got to touch on, and then a bunch of stuff that's cool. Because I'm joking around here. Let's do one that's cool, and then John, you're going to jump in with the serious one here. So Andrew WK has announced a full band tour. So the Lord of Party, Mr. Andrew WK, he's going to go on tour in the fall. He's taking a full band. This is opposed to a lot of the solo performances that he's been doing, opposed to a lot of the he's done a lot of stuff with just him and a piano, right?
And him and an iPod.
And Crenshaw Toffee, his sidekick, who I think is fantastic.
I don't know the Crenshaw Toffee stars. You have to tell me that in a sec. So what Andrew's going to be doing is, first of all, he says he's releasing a new album of rock and roll music this year. Apparently it's coming out via Sony, the major label. So this is potentially like a actual big deal Andrew WK record and not some weird side project thing. The tour, it's coming in the fall. It's called the Party Never Dies Tour because, of course, it is. It kicks off in September on the 14th in Atlanta, Georgia. It goes up there to Chicago to see Liverpool, Neil, through Minneapolis, Kansas, Denver, Salt Lake City, a bunch of places in Canada as well. Ends up in Mexico City on November 18th. So this is a big tour. There's lots of places. I somehow just went like, the U.S., Canada ends up in Mexico City, but now that I actually scroll through this list and read it, he also goes to the U.K. So the U.K. is in there too. It's just, you know, an unremarkable part of North America that we don't talk about, but he's playing a bunch of dates there. So anyways, Andrew WK, new record apparently coming, lots of touring and stuff. Any experiences with Mr. WK live on your part?
Yeah. I've seen him three times. I've seen Solo twice and Ramones once. And I mean, before seeing him live, I always thought, yeah, he's cool, whatever. He's not like really my thing. I saw him live. Andrew WK is amazing live. Everyone should see him live. I know people are like, oh, what is he going to talk about partying again? Or, oh, you know, he's got party as a world philosophy. Blah. But honestly, when you see him up on stage rocking, like he believes what he's saying, and you can disagree with his concept or whatever, but he means what he says and he blows the house down and everyone should see him live. And I'm excited to see the state. I've never seen the full band version and I hope he brings Crenshaw Toffee with him.
I've never seen him live. I've been wanting to see him live. I bought my ticket earlier today. So I'm really excited.
I saw him, man, years and years ago. He played Guelph where I went to university in, oh God, I can't even remember when this would have been. It's been like 2004 or 5 or something like that. Like it feels like it was the longest time ago. But it was, you know, it was pretty much exactly like you had described. It was, as much as his party persona might be an act, it comes across completely infectious on stage. So it is at the very least just an amazing show to go watch. When was this year? I just looked it up. February of 2004 is when
damn, we saw him. Yo.
So yeah, that was a while ago. That was right after The Wolf came out. So yeah, it's been a while. 2004, fuck. Why aren't I dead? That was a while ago. So anyways, yeah, you should go see Andrew WK. John, serious story here. Follow up okay. On the ghost ship thing.
This one is not funny, although maybe it's good depending on your perspective or maybe justice being met out. As everyone remembers, in December, 36 people were killed at the DIY spot, the Ghost Ship in Oakland. What happened was the place caught on fire. Some of the exits had actually been purposely blocked off, and the only way out was to like climb down like a ladder or something. So some people got caught inside and either died from smoke inhalation or actually burned to death. And people couldn't get out. The reason the whole thing happened, or the reason the whole thing was unsafe, was because the facility was way, way, way under blow code, like not even close. So finally, the state has charged building property manager Derek Almeida and the venue creative director, but that's really just kind of like the guy that throws the DIY parties, Max Harris. They've each been charged with 36 separate counts of involuntary manslaughter. Basically, prosecutors are saying that they created the fire hazard by blocking exits, loading the venue with flammable material, and not having fire extinguishers at the place, which is all pretty bad, I guess. The conflicting thing here is, on one side, well, the punk thing is, you know, we love DIY venues. We don't want the government, or we don't want people shutting us down or censoring us or telling us what to do. But here's is a kind of a strong argument for the other side. It's like, well, the codes kind of do have a point in that, so people don't die in that tragic accidents, you know. So we're at a real, and I see a lot of the punk rockers are like, you know, how could this guy let this happen? Well, it's like, well, you go to DIY shows a lot and you don't complain. It's kind of the same thing. I'm not saying these guys are good guys. I think these guys, well, I don't have enough information to say whether or not these guys actually should be found guilty. I don't know. But we have a real conflict of punk ethics, if you will. The one being that, you know, we don't want people interfering or censoring us or shutting us down because we want to do what we want to do. The other is, we want people to be safe and not die, you know. So I don't have any words of wisdom here, except that it's a tragic event. Do I think these guys are going to get convicted? I think they'll probably plea bargain and get something. I don't think the DA, the prosecutor, the DA really wants to put these guys away for 39 years in prison, which they couldn't do. I think that the DA wants to send out a message to say, if you have an unlicensed DIY venue, you better shut down, because if this happens again, we're going to go after everybody. And actually, as a side note, a very famous venue in New York, a DIY spot sort of similar to Ghost Ship, not nearly as dangerous as I understand. The police raided it and actually were arresting people for simply throwing in a DIY show. I don't know if anybody actually got charged with anything, but I know people were arrested and held overnight. So the local police are cracking down on these as a response to the Ghost Ship. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I honestly don't know. You know what I mean? I would say it's a bad thing if all DIY spots actually were safe, and the point of this is just to, you know, make everyone pay for a liquor license. But on the other hand, if DIY spots aren't safe, maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. I don't really have an answer to this, Adam or Ricky.
I would love to see, Adam, I don't want to be morbid about it or anything like that, but like I would love to know specifically what some of these violations were. And it might actually be like informative to people that are doing DIY shows to know, you know, just on a basic level, what types of things you should be really cognizant of. So let's assume here that we're talking about people that are throwing shows in non-traditional venues that are, you know, that are not going to be like a fully licensed, real, legal establishment. Let's say you're still going to throw a show somewhere, right? Well, what happened here? Like you said in your summary there that, you know, there were places that were blocked off that should have been fire exits or anything like that, right? Well,
right.
I sort of want to know in detail, like what does that mean? Like what did they do? What weird misstep did you take to actually, you know, block off a fire exit? Right. Like there's got to be like a prescriptive list of like things where you can go and you can say like, hey, people, if you're gonna do something like this, because we're not gonna stop you from having shows because, you know, people are gonna show where they're gonna show, right? Maybe these are a few things that are warning signs that should stand out in case you get into these kinds of situations where you are someone that is quasi responsible for one of these venues. I'm curious, what the actual, you know, not an abstract things that they could have done right would be.
However, just because DA says it doesn't mean it's true. You know what I mean? And also like, when they say block off a fire, now I have no idea, and I'm not commenting on this thing. The DA saying an exit was blocked off might simply mean somebody left like a potted plant next to a door. You know what I mean? Or it could mean they put, you know, matches up against the door and nailed it shut to keep sound out. It could mean any.
Yeah, I want to know. That's what I want to know. I want to know specifically what kinds of things were going on here. Your mind immediately jumps to like the worst version of it. Like you immediately think that they're like, you know, they've welded the doors shut. And it's like, okay, well, that's probably not what they're talking about. Like there's probably some minor thing that happened that when the legalities get involved becomes like the fire exit was blocked. And maybe it was that there was a plant in the way, right? Like I'm genuinely curious to know what those things would be.
Well, maybe I'll try to dig up the actual charges and we'll know next week. Maybe I'll see if I can find it.
I might be behind on this. How was the fire even started? Did they ever figure that out?
I think probably just somebody like threw a cigarette on the ground or something. No, nobody knows. I don't think.
Yeah. I've been to DIY venues and even the ones that I've been to have been like, they still have some sort of standard of keeping it all clean and stuff like that. And
not all of them, Ricky.
I know not all of them. I mean,
not the burnt ramen, baby.
No, I mean, but the ones I've been to, I mean, at least have some sort of like at least awareness that, yeah, there's a possibility they could get shut down or really bad stuff can happen like this. I just think like it's not anti-punk to make sure it's somewhat safe in the worst possible scenario.
True. Very well put. Very well.
It's awful that this happened. John, I'm going to ask you this. Is manslaughter like kind of overcharging this?
Them? Most people don't know what manslaughter is. Manslaughter,
I know what it is. I just, it feels like that's like a lot for something that was clearly an accident. Well, I guess that's manslaughter, but go ahead.
Well, Adam, see, when I was younger, I always thought like manslaughter was like you meant to kill someone and then like you ripped their body apart. Like, Adam, do you know what manslaughter is?
It is the most metal of crime names.
Manslaughter, there's actually in California, this is California, there's two types of manslaughter. Every state is different. There's voluntary and involuntary manslaughter.
Right.
Voluntary manslaughter is where you mean to hurt someone, but you don't mean to kill them. Let's say Adam and I are at a bar and I say, like Adam, I think you're stupid. And Adam punches me and he means that just to break my nose, or he doesn't mean to break, he just means to punch me. That's what I mean.
But I don't know the power of my own like fury and you explode.
Right. That's involuntary. That's voluntary manslaughter.
That's the dream, John.
This is involuntary. For Adam to kill me in an explosive punch. Involuntary manslaughter is where you act not unreasonably. You act recklessly, and that results in someone's death. For example, let's say you leave your car unlocked and running, and you go in to, I don't know, get something out of your house, and it rolls down the street, and it accidentally rolls over someone and kills them. That's manslaughter. Even though you didn't mean to kill someone, you didn't even mean to hurt someone, you act recklessly and someone died. That's involuntary manslaughter, which is what they're being charged with. So I think it's appropriate. I think it's better that than actually charge them with something scarier, to tell you the truth. They could charge them with negligence, I guess.
I don't know. I think that like when you have... I mean, one death is bad. Any death is bad. But when there's 36, there's
I didn't realize how many.
Yeah,
people
like
died.
There's some. I think mental threshold that you go over where you're like, okay, like you can make a mistake, but wow, that's crossing the line from mistake into something else at that point. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what we seg into off of that because everything else is sort of non important. But that story continues to develop. So I guess we leave it at that.
Let's play a song and then we'll come back. How about that?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Sure. I'll grab this one here. So
all right,
John. Tomorrow morning, it's a Wednesday right now. Tomorrow morning, I'm gonna go get on a train and I'm going to Ottawa. And
ooh, have fun.
It is the Ottawa explosion is going on. It actually started tonight, but you know, hey, whatever. So I'm going to be there. There's going to be a bunch of bands playing. It's going to be cool. I knew so little about most of the lineup, even when I bought tickets for this thing. I just knew that it was like the kind of music that I wanted to go hang out and listen to. So I've been learning and I've been exploring. So here is one of these bands that's playing the Ottawa Explosion here. So this is sort of like a long stay Ottawa underground indie scene band called Bonnie Doon. So Bonnie Doon, I've seen them mentioned for years because they always play these kind of events. But they now finally have a proper full length out. The Bonnie Doon's, the first full length that they have out is called Dooner Nooner. And the song I'm going to play is called Now or Neverish. So, this is a band, female fronted. I think they're all female actually. And the the music on here is incredibly varied. At some point, it's like sludgy and lo-fi. At some point, it's almost like surf rock. And then there's other points where it sounds like shrill saxophone-driven punk rock, like, say, like X-Ray Specs. So it bounces between those sort of three axes as you're listening to it, and it makes for an incredibly interesting listen. So this is a song called Now or Neverish. It's from the Bonnie Doone full length that came out this year. They are from Ottawa. They're playing the Ottawa Explosion. I'm pretty sure they're closing the whole thing out on Sunday night. So here you go, Bonnie Doone. We're back. There's a few other things we want to talk about, some songs that came out that maybe you want to go check out, maybe you want to go listen to. So the first of all, we're mentioning this because they are special friends of the Punk News podcast, but we've mentioned the release this is going to be on before, but there is a new World Inferno Friendship Society song that you can go check out. It is called Freedom in the Wilderness. It's off the Hugs for Chelsea benefit compilation that it was supporting Chelsea Manning when she got out of prison. And I believe, John, they're still adding songs to this release. Like they keep throwing things onto it as time goes on.
Correct.
So yeah, so it is very much an evolving, growing compilation. Actually, if I go check it out right now, it is at 39 songs right now, and it was definitely not at 39 songs last time I listened to it. So there's a new. This new World Inferno song. Now, John, you're a World Inferno super maniac. Any thoughts on this one here?
I think it's real cool. I think World Inferno, what's cool about World Inferno is every album, it's definitely World Inferno, but they have a unique angle. And this one seems to be, it's going to be the most operatic. The last one was operatic, but this one's going to be the most operatic, or perhaps the most musical to date. Also, I think certainly the most detailed and the most complex to date. And I think it's going to be cool. And I thought this track was cool. It is called Freedom is a Wilderness. And also, of course, World Inferno with their classic, anarcho bend. I just think it's a wonderful combination of, this 20s jazz with opera kind of thing with anarcho punk leanings, which is what World Inferno does, and it's cool.
I'm always down for more New World Inferno French Society. I like the song. John, were you thrown off by the production? I was a little bit. And my other question is, does this mean we're going to get a proper release this year from them?
I don't know. Was I thrown off by the production? I wasn't thrown off by I think this might be a demo. I'm not sure. But listen, I mean, I'm so sick of overblown, super slick, plastic production that we hear on a lot of bands we cover punk news. I'm so much down for a little too raw than over polished. And if it's got to be a little too raw, that's fine with me. I'll take it every day of the week.
For other bands, I would agree, but they're a band that sort of needs not like a, crisp, perfect production, but there's so much going on in their songs that they necessitate it just a little bit more higher quality, I think. No? Yes? I don't know.
Red Eyed Soul did have excellent production. I think Red Eyed Soul is the gold standard for production for World Inferno. I think this was really just kind of I don't even know if this would be on any upcoming album, because they do throw tracks on benefit compilations a lot. There's the Expatriate Act off the Fat Records, not my Bush, whatever those compilations. Adam, you remember what those
Rock Against compilations? Rock Against Bush.
Yeah. World Inferno has an exclusive track on that called Expatriate Act. So they like to throw unusual stuff on those. They got a track on the Punk News mixtape number 1 and 2. And they just do cool stuff like that. And, yeah.
Hmm.
So that's coming out. There's also a new song from Bad Cop that is out called Retrograde. This is off their upcoming full-length titled Warriors that's going to appear on a Fat Records release on June 16th, 2017. You can go stream that over on Punk News. Ricky, you're clued into what's going on here, right?
Yeah. This episode will be out by the time this is probably posted, but I'm in the midst of reviewing the album. It's going to be out on Friday the 16th. Yeah, the 16th. This is one, and if you, and I'll say, if you haven't listened to it while you're listening to this, if you like what they've done thus far, you will definitely like this record. They're much more confident. They've definitely found you can see that they've kind of grounded their sound a little bit. Lyrically, it's a lot more serious. They went down the socio-political route. And this is actually one of my favorite songs. This is the first track off the record. And what else do I have to say about it? Their bassist, Lynn, also takes over some lead vocals in a couple songs. The title track is actually quite good too. If you liked what they've been doing thus so far and you like, melodic three-part harmony pop punk, you will like this record. And it's good. And I think they played a few songs when I saw them with Leftover Crack and Starving Wolves a few months ago, and they were good live. The songs sound good live too, so definitely check this record out.
All right, so the third I think song of note that we want to talk about this week was Sheer Mag, the Philly band, right, John?
Philly band. Right now they are the Philly band.
The Philly band, yeah.
I think none of them.
So they are streaming a new song. It is called Need to Feel Your Love. It's off their debut album that's of the same name, which is coming out on the 14th of June, which is, or July, 14th of July. 14th of June is today. No, 14th of July, which is not today. John, what do people need to know about this?
What do people need to know about this is Sheer Mag is kind of the latest hype band, and I don't mean that derogatorily. I mean that they are a band that has been gaining traction steadily since their explosive first single, and they've just been growing. They've put out 3 singles so far. The new album, as this track makes clear, is the clay of Sheer Mag is, oh, they sound like Thin Lizzy, but their singer is kind of a Billie Holiday thing, and she's unique. And to a degree, that's true. And honestly, I was a little frustrated by people going insane over Sheer Mag, and then like people like, oh yeah, they sound like Thin Lizzy. We love Thin Lizzy. It's like, man, I've been loving Thin Lizzy and AC/DC and Judas Priest for years, and I've got nothing but disdain for the punk community. But now Thin Lizzy's cool. You know what I mean? It's like so arbitrary. Like this, the general punks. You know what's cool, what's not cool. I was cool before it was cool, but I'm still not cool, and everyone's still saying Thin Lizzy's cool now. Anyways, that being said, Sheer Mag is a pretty unique band. I think they're pretty cool. I dig them. What's interesting about the new track? Two things. Is Sheer Mag has extremely political songs, and they have songs that are basically like the French Revolution, that we should go kill so and so because we don't like what he's doing. They've got lots of songs like that. However, what's coming apparent on the new album is that they've got some love jams too. So it's interesting. You've got the super political stuff and the love jams. And what was also interesting about this track right here that was debuted, it's the second track that's been debuted from the album. It's got, instead of the Thin Lizzy AC/DC thing, which I always said was cool, but now it's only been cool for the past 8 months, is that it's got kind of a disco thing going that Ricky mentioned. So that a little bit of a left turn from the band. It's a band that's doing something unique, or at least it's taking old pieces and putting them together in a unique way. And we'll see. As with any band, this band is facing the dreaded hype demon. A lot of hype in this band. Can they meet the challenge?
See, it's weird because I sat down and I listened to the Bad Cop, Bad Cop song, and then I listened to this right after it before we started the show. And this probably says a lot about just like where my head is right now. Like the Bad Cop, Bad Cop one was like, it was just sort of fine. I'm like, all right, like I know what they're doing. It, you know, I've heard this kind of thing, you know, many times before, especially from fat bands, and it's fine. Like it's totally enjoyable, and I don't have a problem with it. And then I turned this on, and I just sort of went like, ooh, like this is interesting to me. And you know, but again, like you said, it's just repurposing a different set of old parts than say the Bad Cop song is, but maybe it's because like they're newer to me because I'm not sitting around like you, John, listening to the Thin Lizzy or whatever. I was like, oh, all right, I like this. It's kind of cool.
I was left incredibly confused. I'm going to check this band out though, more, because this is the first time I'd heard of them, was like maybe an hour ago.
I'm not defending this band or disparaging this band. I like them. I'm not a mega fan, but this track is not representative of them overall. This track is the track. It's like, and on this track, we're going to do something you don't expect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is what I want. So maybe I don't want the rest of their stuff. So anyways, yeah. So do we have anything else we want to talk about this week? Anything else that was on the docket?
Hey, it's 90s
Week of Punk News. Yeah, it's 90s Week of Punk News. We're doing reviews of albums and things that happened in the 90s, which is a big span of time in which I was a teenager, so I should probably be more clued in about what's going on than I do. The 90s are weird, yeah. Man. Like,
they are.
Like,
the 90s suck, man. The 90s suck. People love the 90s. The 90s sucked.
Well, like, the weird thing about it is, like, if you sit down and look at it, I feel like there's the 90s that I experienced, and then there's the 90s that I retroactively want to acknowledge, but I totally wasn't doing anything about at the time. And those are two different things. So, you know, on the one hand, I was looking through the 90s list, my own personal 90s list. I was like, made a little playlist in iTunes here, and I was looking at things that I had MP3s of or whatever, and I'm like, oh yeah, 90s. For me, the 90s was ska. I'm like, you know, I've got my Suicide Machines in there, I've got my Stubborn All-Stars, lots of Less Than Jake records, and, you know, all this stuff that was from that era. So that's realistically was my 90s. You know, Slackers, Hepcat, you know, all that was going on, and then getting into all this other Hellcat-y kind of stuff that I was into, you know, or even on Hellcat, I'm like, you know, Sick of It All records and things like that. And like, that was probably more realistically what my 90s was. But if I'm to go today and to be like, oh, what was cool in the 90s? Like the Adam of today is going to be like, oh, you know, like you had like Rocket from the Crypt was doing cool stuff in the 90s. And, you know, you had, of course, your Propagandhi stuff was going on then. And, and I'm looking at like all these things that are in my 90s list now that I never listened to at the time. Like, I really want to go like, oh yeah, that's when Primal Scream's Screamadelica came out. That was a great record. And it's like, I didn't fucking listen to that until 10 years ago. So there was no way that I was listening to something like that in the 90s. Like Pavement. I retroactively, you know, oh yeah, Pavement is great. But like, I didn't listen to Pavement in the 90s. I was way too dorky to listen to Pavement at the time. So it's such a weird era when I go back and look at it. Like again, I'm like, oh yeah, there's all these No Means No records that came out in the 90s. But like in the 90s, I didn't listen to those. I was listening to, you know, the fucking Planet Smashers. So it's a weird, weird period in my life to try to be retrospective about, because there's like the reality of what I was doing, and then there's what I've found since. And those are two totally different things.
You know, what's interesting for me about the 90s is I think I might have even talked about this on the last podcast, is in my family, there's two sets of cousins, the older cousins and the younger cousins, and I'm the youngest of the older cousins. So for me in the 90s, like, I thought everyone was like listening to like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden and stuff, because that's what my cousins were listening to, but that's because they were all older than me. And so I had no, I mean, honestly, like, I think I had heard of Blink 182 and that kind of stuff in the 90s, but I wasn't like listening to it at all. And what I find is interesting is in the late 2000s, 2010s, 2015, that's when I really started getting to certain 90s bands. Like Cake, I really got into, like, around 2008 or 2009, I got really into Cake. They Might Be Giants. Certain Ben Folds, certain bands from the 90s I'm getting into just now or a few years ago. But overall, I think the 90s were pretty bad music-wise, especially punk-wise.
It's weird when you go and you look at it but from a year's perspective, because it's easy to go through like a just like a year by year thing and pick out things that nowadays are still cool. Like you would go like, oh, well, like, you know, Repeater came out in 1990, Red Medicine in 95. So like, you had a whole ton of Fugazi stuff come out in those early 90s eras. And it was like, yes, that's totally true. But were the early 90s, like, culturally the era of Fugazi to anyone? It was like, you know, that was the grunge era. That was happening. Like, I'm looking here. Okay, yeah, Drive Like Jehu's Yank Crime was 1994. Sure, and it was a major label release too. But did anyone at the time give too much shit that came out? Not really. I mean, like, in retrospect, everybody loves Drive Like Jehu because, of course, you should. But yeah.
What also is interesting is, as we think of the 90s, doesn't actually begin in 1990. It begins around 1993. Like, when people think of like hair metal and like 80s music, they think of like, you know, early to mid 80s. But like Poison, Motley Crue were huge in 1991. It was kind of the tag team of Guns N' Roses and Nirvana that kind of destroyed all of that. And that's like 1993.
You know what's funny is that I was thinking about that like yesterday night. And I might be weird. I was at the gym and I was wandering around the gym and I was listening.
I was listening to Hatebreed.
Yeah, I was listening to No Means No's Wrong while I was at the gym. And Wrong is one of the most incredible sounding records ever. It is the guitar tone on it, the sound on it, just like the sort of like speed and fury that they're putting out while still kind of like being tongue-in-cheek about it. It's just amazing. Like, go listen to No Means No Is Wrong. But that was 1988, and I'm sitting there and I'm listening to it, and I'm like shit, I mean, like, this sounds so much better than 95% of everything that I hear, that I have heard in the past 10 years. Like, it's so good and it sounds so vital. And I'm like, well, hold on a second. I thought about that and I'm like, remember when everyone was like, oh, the 80s was all this like hair stuff, and then Nirvana showed up and, like, you know, like, brought manna from heaven and fixed everything. And I was like, wow, like, that is such a weird, not true to what music was actually being produced perspective that we've all just sort of bought into. Because, like,
well, that's marketing, baby.
That's totally the story that we've all been sold, right? And like, I was sold that story like hook, line, and sinker as a kid, because, like, you know, I was a little kid and like Nirvana came out, and like when Nirvana was out, it was, you know, I was what, like 11, 12, 13 or whatever, when all like when Nirvana was around. And it was such a, like, we were told that, oh, well, there was this, I didn't listen to any of like the hair metal stuff or whatever, but we were told that it existed. And we were told that Nirvana and grunge killed it and did all of us a service. And this was just like something I just bought into. And every time I hear something that was really cool out of the 80s, be it something like No Means No Hero, be it even just like Husker Du or The Replacements or anything like that, I'm like, how did I get sold at some point on this, like, the 80s were super horrible and the 90s fixed everything narrative, when all this amazing shit was around and going on in the 80s? I mean, maybe it's true from like a modern rock radio perspective, but you go any deeper than that and like that totally falls apart. It's the weirdest thing. I also want to self-correct myself, and I kept saying like Drive Like Jehu, but I'm pretty sure it was Drive Like Yehu, right?
I mean, it's Aramaic.
Yeah, like the Cup of the Carpenter's Son, right?
Because we're doing 90s week this week, I just wanted to mention just the two reviews I did. I did just real quick. Because
great. I love the 90s.
Well, I was like, I was born in 92. I don't have a ton to say. I was you know, musically conscious. Like,
no, I might be. But like, that's why we hate the 90s. We hate the 90s. And you're like, guys, I want to talk about two great records from the 90s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the, I don't know if it's okay. So I did the Ramones We're Out of Here, which was, you know, I really like that live album, but
I'm not kidding. Darren giving that a 9. I would give that a 7 or 8. Darren really? Gave it a 9. I think it's Alive destroys it. I think it's a little bloated, and I don't love the, I don't want to hear Eddie Vedder singing with the Ramones, you know, but I respect you gave it a 9. I respect it. I'm just saying for me, it's more 7 or 8.
Yeah. See, because you also have Lemmy and Chris Cornell, who recently died. I think over time, I think We're Out of Here is going to age well. And also the fact that I totally forgot that Dee Dee comes back to sing a song too, which is really cool. So I thought it was a nice way to end it. So that's why I decided just to give it a 9. I was between an 8 or a 9. I thought since it's Ramones, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But I got to tell you, I've done a couple hundred reviews for punk news now. This Misfits American Psycho was one of the hardest to write because it's a good record. And I listen to it fairly regularly, but there is so much fucking baggage and bullshit that you have to sift through first between the members of the original lineup and that lineup, that like it almost comes off as a negative review, but I gave it an 8 anyway. I don't know you guys were clearly more were older, but I mean, when that record came out, was that a cringeworthy moment for you guys, or were you into it?
I wasn't in the Misfits yet, honestly. I think a lot of people didn't even understand. This was before the internet was big. I think a lot of people didn't understand that Danzig wasn't in the band, and I think people actually were surprised when they went to shows and Danzig wasn't there. I think a lot of people I think it's like it is now. Some people say, oh, it's not Danzig, but it's a good record. It is a good record. I would give it a 7, not an 8. But some people hate it. I'm part of this creepy, there's the Misfits Facebook group, and it is the creep. Like, it's not supposed to be creepy, but people are creepy as hell. people are still fighting about Michael Graves. They're like, man, like they'll just post in it, man, didn't Michael Graves suck? And I'm like, it was 20 years ago, guys. Let it go. Well,
exactly. You know? I mean, and in the comments of that review, they're talking about how Famous Monsters was just as good, if not better. And I'm thinking, like, I didn't think so. I thought like this was their one good effort as that version of the band. And then also, you know, this is when they really tried to start cashing in, because there are videos, you know, they did music videos for MTV. They were trying to make it really big. And I don't think it really took.
I definitely remember the marketing about that record when it came out. I remember seeing the cover advertised everywhere. I remember seeing, I don't explicitly remember there being like music videos, although I'm sure there were some, but it was, they tried to make a serious go of it when it was out. I mean, it was on, what was it on? It was on Geffen, right?
It was on Geffen.
Right? So yeah. It was a, you know, it was a well promoted piece of music, but it wasn't the kind of thing that I was listening to at the time. And I feel like I missed the whole debate. So by the time that I decided that I needed to figure out the whole Misfits thing, the popular opinion about like what was the canonical Misfits and what was the John, like the apocryphy of it, right? Like that was separated already. So I could go and I could say that, okay, I'm going to listen to the Danzig stuff and stay away from this other stuff that is bad because it's been told to me that it's bad.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, this story's been told before, but if Jerry only could have got the marketing juice that he got from the Misfits name alone under another name, it would have been generally positive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if it was the Jerry Only Band and people cared about the Jerry Only Band, people would say, oh yeah, that's a cool record, you know, but the Misfits is a big name to live up to. In my opinion, it's a good record, doesn't live up to the Misfits name.
Yeah. And then since we're just talking about, just like anniversary reviews, I just thought I could not believe when I saw this on Twitter, but someone I was following mentioned that Against Me's New Wave turns 10 years old next month, which is fucking mind blowing to me. I don't know if you guys had anything you wanted to say about it.
You know what? I had someone the other day who I know from I guess like the business world, but is not one of my music people that I know from, for whatever reason, has started getting into Against Me, and I didn't even know they were into punk rock, that they sent me a message the other day, and they said, you got to recommend me some other bands like this Against Me band, because I'm really into this and I really like it. They're like, and my favorite record is this new wave record. Like, it's great. And and I'm like, wow. I'm like, you're coming at this not from the, like, you're not coming at this as a veteran of the Against Me wars. Like, you know, you didn't lose an arm in like Against Me War One when we were all arguing about them being on No Idea. And, you know, you didn't go blind in Against Me Wars Two when they signed to Fat. And you know, you didn't lose your son in Against Me War Three when they signed to the major label. You just picked up on this individual record and was like, oh, I really like this. It's fun. Like, wow. Just like to hear something, you know, from that perspective is amazing.
Like, I went back to see the reviews on Punk News about it, and someone reviewed it and gave it like a 4 out of 5 for the deluxe version. But when the first one, first review of it, of the original, I forgot who wrote it, but they gave it a 4 out of 10.
But also, that was before we faced the current inflation crisis that we have for reviews right now.
Oh,
at Punk News. I mean, listen, a 4 is a bad review. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that would be like a 5 or a 6. But to be fair, reviewers now don't have as much of a bone to pick when they do review. Like then, I'm gonna, you know, I'm mad that Against Me did this, so I'm gonna slam them. You know, we don't really see that anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, that Against Me review. It is infamous in my head, and I knew who wrote it and everything. And yeah, there was a time where people were super wrapped up emotionally in what was going on in Against Me from record to record, and it was rough. We didn't all make it out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, so
we didn't all make it out.
I think we're at the end. Are we, what are we doing? Are we playing another song? Are we just letting everything?
Yeah. I'm gonna play a song. Someone tell me I'm cool. This is AC/DC doing If You Want Blood, You Got It. We'll be right back.
All right, we're back. This will be the last Punk News podcast because whatever label represents ACDC is going to sue us into the ground now. If you want to send us an email, it's podcast@punknews.org. Thanks to Greg for producing. Thanks to, you know,
ACDC for bringing John great music for the past 33
yeah,
years.
Yeah, that too. So see you guys later.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.